RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Manama Fox is a former member of the Maori Party. She attended the 23-day End the Mandate's occupation of Parliament grounds in February 2022 and appeared in the documentary film River of Freedom, discussing the government's Guantanamo Bay tactics against peaceful protesters. And we've invited Manama to come on our program to talk about the hikoi, which made its way to Parliament grounds Wellington on Tuesday, maybe how it compared with the anti-mandate convoy and 23-day occupation that I just mentioned, and also maybe a kind of a vision for the future. Manama, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back again, Paul. And I did, on my way down to the hikoi, consider some of the convoy and anti-mandate practices. On my way there, I asked the powers that be whether we should be bringing tents or parking the cars up down Molesworth Street and turning the keys off and jumping out.
Yeah, well, you know, it all adds it's all intel, right, for the next one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Want to get on to what's just happened, but, you know, a few years have gone by. Oh, Bernard Orsman in the Herald, in reporting ahead of the hikoi arriving in Wellington, he said it would dwarf the violent protest at Parliament. Two key words there. Dwarf, that was trying to get some, you know, snarky comparison, I felt, but also violent. It wasn't violent, was it?
I mean, it ended in violent ways. Absolutely. It wasn't violent throughout. In fact, the majority of the encounters with the police were the aggravators. They were practicing their riot moves. They were, doing things at different times of the day or night, keeping people up. I mean, the only violence I really saw on the day came from them until the clashes and the fire started. And then, absolutely, there was violence that came in from the other side. Not the protesters, I have to say. I didn't see the majority of any of the protesters doing any of that. They seemed to come from that little movement of young people who came flooding into Parliament grounds looking for a scrap.
Right. Agent provocateurs. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you can say that. You can say whatever you like. It's your regular.
No, that's true. All right, so an impressive arrival in Wellington on Tuesday. Is that how you'd describe it?
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal, okay.
Yeah, breathtaking. There's a few words to describe it. It was uplifting, made me proud to be Māori in this country, which I don't.
Can I ask you another question?
Yes.
Proud to be Kiwi as well? I'm not trying to be provocative, but I'm just...
Oh, you can be provocative as much as you like. I thrive on people who are provocative.
Yeah.
I'm provocative.
But I'm not meaning to be. I'm just curious question.
No, I know
question.
What you mean, but you can't be Kiwi. You can't be Kiwi in this country without the tangata whenua of this country. Because Kiwi, to be Kiwi, in my understanding of the essence of the word, one, it takes its name from the native word. Number two, it embodies the essence of adopting a ambicultural lifestyle in this country, where a lot of the ways that we deal with one another and the proudness that we have of ourselves when we're overseas comes from a grounding in Māori culture. So I'm proud to be Māori, and for me that's not different.
Do we live in a great country?
Hell yes, we live in a great country.
Yeah.
I mean, jingos, you know, we didn't see idiots slamming into the protest in their cars, trying to wipe people out as they did in the Black Lives Matter movement. We didn't see, we had some idiot throw some firecrackers into the crowd from out the back of Parliament somewhere, or out on the road actually a couple of times. But, you know, people were not biting any sort of provocative action. Then there was a bit of provocative action on the sidelines from generally older Pākehā people, but there were well more tangata, tiriti, Pākehā, all the cultures, well more of a mixed ethnicity in support of the hikoi than anybody on the fringes. It was fabulous.
Those older people that you just mentioned.
Mm.
Yeah, they come from a different era, and they'll look back to when they were young and growing up, and they'll have an idyllic probably view of that, because I remember my childhood, it was pretty golden.
Egalitarian society that they all got to live in as long as it was.
So you can see why they're probably...
Well, hold on. It was I can see. It's where the entire doctrine of discovery comes from. It's where the multiple pieces of litigation in this country to ensure, or legislation in this country to ensure that Māori were forced into a position of intergenerational poverty. And so the intergenerational wealth of this country was built upon the intergenerational poverty when you remove land, confiscate land, take away people's income, their livelihood, and their ability to even live and eat off the forests that were deforested from places, removed from your fishing places, your economy stripped away from you on purpose through legislation. So, yes, I understand that their privilege has been hurt right now, and their sense of entitlement, that if you grow up on the other side of the coin, where Māori were told in legislation and over 100 years of schooling in this country that they weren't actually physiologically capable of academic rigor, they weren't academically capable, literal words, I can quote you, if you like, in this country, in the establishment of our systems, our health, our education, and all of those things. Yes, on the other side of that coin is generations of people who grew up believing they were superior by race. And that's what was taught. It's not a myth. It's exactly what happened in this country.
Hmm. That was the nature of the times, though. I'm not making excuses, but things evolve, right?
Yes, things evolve. And so when I look back at the rising generation of this country, I have no fear that that is soon to die out.
Right. Okay, so good engagement from those on the Golden Mile in Wellington. I see the retailers are complaining that no one came in the shops, but you weren't there. Well, they weren't there for that.
Well, to be fair, last time on the hikoi from Te Papa to Parliament for the foreshore and seabed, it took so long to get the tail of the hikoi in when the nose had been in something like 3 hours earlier. Everybody rolled out of Parliament, went shopping, and then waited for everybody else to catch up until the tail got in. However, this time, there were so many people, absolutely biggest number in a protest in this country I've ever seen and been part of. I was in the climate change, the Children's Climate Change Action Day, where everybody got the day off school and Wellington was flooded, and they reported, I'm pretty sure, you can fact check me, but I think they reported between numbers that range anywhere between 50 to 70 to 80,000 people and more, because it's something to celebrate. But here we have what seemed like forever. Now, I was not far back from the front of the hikoi, but so many people had flooded down other spaces. The grounds were full before the hikoi arrived. And I knew there were thousands and thousands of people behind me. We could not see the end of it. And if you've seen this, the time-lapse footage of that march, it looks to me like there was easily 100,000 people, and I've been in 100,000 people march. It felt bigger than that.
Okay. What do you think David Seymour and ACT's game manoeuvrings are all about, ultimately? Because if you define those three principles, it all sounds totally reasonable on the surface. How can you argue with them?
What do you mean? That's terrible. It sounds reasonable. You'd have to not know anything about the treaty to think that.
Well, I mean, on the surface, if you have told people that New Zealand government has the right to govern and
New Zealanders have authority over their property and all that.
Yeah.
No, he's willfully misleading the New Zealand public and lying about the treaty and what he believes things are. Now, I'm really sick of trying to educate every room I walk into, because our country doesn't educate our own people over the treaty history and the principles, the development of the Waitangi Tribunal and so on and so on and so on. But here we go. We have to do it. Because otherwise...
We don't need to go through the whole thing, because we've had plenty of people on explaining
that. Well, I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
But here's the one thing I want to point out, that the reason we agreed on principles is because we couldn't agree on the word of the law, because if you did, you'd have to take the international law of contra preferentum, which says clearly that if you have a treaty in two languages, the treaty of the indigenous people must take precedence in the law. Clearly. We can't, the New Zealand couldn't live up to that because they would have to then give it all back, all of it. Now, at Ihu Matau, here is the example. At Ihu Matau, confiscated land had long since been in private ownership, was now up for sale. And instead of selling it off to Fletchers, who were going to turn it into another 400 or so houses, the whānau occupied it and said, no, we're not going to let you do it. This is our marae that we have lived in forever. The city has come to meet us. And now everything around us is squeezing us out. This is where you dump the sewage fees. And here's the problem. The government won't do it. The government won't solve it, because to do so would mean every piece of for sale land, at least in Waikato and Auckland, anyone could sit on it and occupy it and say, no, this is ours, you confiscated it and we're taking it back. And if the government stepped in and brought back Ihu Matau and returned it to the people to stop the argument, then that would cause precedence in the country. So they won't do it. And guess what? They still haven't solved it. They're still occupying it and nobody's being moved off. So here are the problems that lay in front of us. If you can't uphold the letter of the law, then you go to the principles of the law. Now, this is what the government have put on Māori and said, we will accept the principles. Māori went, okay, we'll work with that. We have always offered, in fact, the treaty was an offering to come and live in our country. We retained
defining it as a country, because it's very important, isn't it?
We defined it as a country in 1835 when we had the United Council of Chiefs sign the Declaration of Independence. Yes, we're our own nation. We were our own nation of tribes and people who lived here. Whichever way we governed it, that was up to us.
So the perspective is, from what you're saying, is this is an occupied nation.
Of course, it's an occupied nation. What did, like, you can't say Captain Cook came and discovered a country if there are people already living on it. Like, this is the law of discovery that they had to prove by through Europe and the powers that be at the time, with the other countries all agreed to this, that if you could prove that there was no civilized people on a place that you found, you're allowed to claim it as yours. So here in New Zealand, thankfully, we're at the bottom of the whole world. Thankfully, we sort of cottoned on to a little bit of this, and we had the Declaration of Independence saying, no, hold on, we're our own people.
Oh, so that was done ahead of anticipating.
Yes.
Well, so that was like an insurance move.
We've had people on who have told you all about the treaty, so I don't have to go back over it all, you don't know that. That's an issue. The big white flag with the red cross on it and the stars in the corner, that was all over the protests as well. That's the whakaputanga flag. That's the flag of independence for the United Tribes and the Chiefs of Aotearoa. We flew that flag on ships around the Pacific so people would know this is who we are. Hmm. We had an independence. We then signed an agreement as the United Chiefs of Aotearoa with the king for settlement. And in it, it says you can keep all your stuff and all your fishes, names them, your waters, names them, all your whenua, your everything. And we'll be able to establish sovereignty or kāwanatanga in te reo Māori. And that's, you can rule over your people. And we'll trade with you and let you come and be here, because we frankly don't want to have to deal with them. They're drunken sailors who are playing up at the time of the treaty being signed.
Yeah, you can imagine what it was like. Yeah, I can. All right, so the vision for the future. How do we all, because we're all in this, whether people like it or not.
I know what you're going to ask. How do we all get to move on and live in this together? Because we all...
Well, it's systems, practical systems,
of
ways of doing...
practical systems. That's what we're fighting for. If the system of health in this country was going to improve the lives and the health of Māori people, it would have done it by now.
I tell you, they're destroying the health of everyone with their sickness system, so we're all in that together too. I know.
Hold on. We've been on the bottom of it forever, on the bottom of that system. This is something that now other people are experiencing going, oh, this system's rubbish. We have been trying and we have proven that we can hold our own health systems that actually practically improve the health of our people. We say, like, well, you're responsible for the funding, you're responsible for the taxes. Here we have showed and demonstrated that we have systems of education where we are now the top performing educational pathway in this country for all students. Kura kaupapa Māori, Parikura has outstripped an NCA pass rate every school in this country year on year on year. And that's not just for Māori students, that's for all students. But you'll never hear about it. There's no promotional pathway for kaupapa Māori education in our country. It's a proven pathway of success. And all the way into university, we have young Māori people who are flying in every sphere of this nation who have no hang-ups over the treaty. They know exactly what it means, who speak their own language, who know their own identity and know the history of our country because we teach it in our school.
How do you have two what would consider themselves sovereign entities living side by side, kind of parallel, or is that too simplistic a view?
No, that's pretty good. Co-governance or side by side and parallel, we already do in Kura Kaupapa Māori. It was subsumed under Ministry of Education because they had no control over it and they want to fund the schools. We say, well, there you go, fund the schools. Our curriculum that we wrote that sits with the New Zealand curriculum, our curriculum resources that we made, that sits with these ones, our teacher training programs and our success, a system that sits side by side, not dictated to by the colonial Victorian model of education that still tries to plant itself out in this country and call
it. Well, I think a lot of people have got problems with that, Marama.
But here we are. Yeah. I mean, if you talk about charter schools as a system sitting next to a system, and here's Miss, the National Party woman, pulling away the Māori Health Authority. What is the fear that Pākehā people have that if you give Māori some semblance of authority? It's an irrational fear. And I know what the answer is. I worked this out years ago. It's the fear that if you give Māori some semblance of control, then they might do to you what you did to them.
Wait on.
Nobody wants that.
Well, hang on there. Back up the truck.
It means is that I believe that Pākehā have an irrational fear of sharing decision-making practices. The treaty asked us in the local government law to elevate the voice of Māori into local decision-making practices around resources, which were stripped and stolen, around housing, around the local infrastructure. Now, every place that has happened, it has benefited the towns, it has benefited the water quality, it has benefited the environment around those places. Where we don't have that level of understanding and elevated decision-making, we have degradation of the water, we have degradation of the resources, we still have ingrained poverty of small minority groups in communities in this nation. The fear that some people in this country may have by recognizing and elevating the voice of Māori, recognizing our own history by teaching it. We're too scared to teach our own history. I know everything about American history. I know everything about British history. I know everything about the conquest of this world because I was a great student. I knew nothing about our people till I finished school and sorted out for myself. There is an irrational fear that if you share decision-making power with Māori who have a distinct and indigenous view to the way that we live with our nation, not against it, with our taiao, not against our taiao being our environment, not against it, that if we share the values of manaakitanga, which is looking after one another, that somehow that might hurt someone's prospects, that might hurt somebody else's outcome. Show me one example where that's yet to ever happen.
But in a material outcome, a material wealth
or
and status.
Or yes, material. But in reverse, the exact thing has exactly happened to Māori. Māori forced in positions of poverty, ingrained systems of institutionalized racism, where over and over again we have proven, statistics have proven, I don't know why anybody still is questioning it, that institutional bias in this country has prejudiced the Māori and privileged the Pākehā. It has. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see it. And for the National Party, David Seymour and Winston Peters to drag up the equal opportunity conversation that was dealt with in the 60s, is a red herring and a smokescreen for continued oppression through what seems like colonial structures of power and grabbing back to make sure that they can stay above and mighty will never rise. It's time to put them back in their box and take away all the toys.
What do you say to people who are nervous and feeling a little insecure about, you know, what's being reported to them, what they think they're seeing, the conversations they're having with their friends and colleagues or whatever? They're seeing, you know, that haka in Parliament, and they're worried.
Oh, my gosh. You should see what aggression. Our whānau are nervous of. They're nervous that they'll have to go back to being trailed around the shops every time they walk in. Our whānau are nervous that they don't get served in the stores when they walk in. Our whānau are nervous that they won't get the flat that they go to when they go to try and find a house in this country where we've got the worst housing crisis in the world. Our whānau is nervous that they won't get a mortgage in a bank that is unjustifiably prejudiced against them. Like, welcome to our conversations.
Yeah.
What is the nerve of allowing Māori a voice? Because the opposite is to shut them down and keep them oppressed.
Do you think we can work through this? Is it possible?
Can you? I'm asking, can Pākehā New Zealand work through their own racist prejudice? Can they? Because you would stand up for Aboriginal people in Australia. Kiwis in this country would stand up for South African movement where they were oppressed. People in this country would stand up for just about every other single Indigenous, environmental loving cause in this world, bar ours. Think on that, New Zealand, because you're asking us to see if we can sort it out. We've been doing nothing but sort it out since we signed it. Prendergast called it a nullity in the law. They discussed whether to exterminate the natives or to civilize them by outruling our language. They had the Suppression of Rebellion Act and said that rebellion deemed the governor at the time could deem rebellion up to him to say what rebellion was. And if he found that there was rebellion there, he could throw in the forces. What did he deem as rebellion? Not agreeing to sell our land.
Okay, yeah.
500 rounds of cannon fire into the PA for 10 days in a row. How is this not taught in our country? At least they teach the Civil War in America. At least they teach about slavery in America. And in Australia, they teach about Reconciliation Day. Here, we talk about a contract that is in dispute because it has two languages and we don't uphold international law. We don't talk about what was done to Māori. We don't admit it. So every room I walk into where I can highlight institutional racism that is disadvantaging our children and health and education, someone sits there and goes, oh, do you think that's racist? And I go, oh, honey, I could give you a lesson of the last 200 years of colonization in this country and therefore the intergenerational trauma and oppression that has been played out on our people. But it's not my job. It's yours. You're contracted in your job under the law to teach yourself and uphold these things. You're a teacher. How do you not know? That's willful ignorance. All willful. We don't want to know, because then we'd have to give up our privilege and release some of our previously thought entitled ways. It's true.
Yeah.
It happens, and I can prove it a million times, but I'm over trying to prove it. People don't want to accept it because they willfully do not want to look.
Thank you for putting it like that. I was thinking as you're talking, because, you know, that issue of privileges, I mean, I can see how people might not feel privileged but are privileged, you know, if you want to scale.
Because it's normal to them.
It's normal
to them.
But, like, you know, a lot of us were in that situation, not as a racial divide or a cultural divide, but 3 years ago, going back to
egalitarian divide.
I mean, I've been treated like shit.
Yes.
quite frankly.
It's disgusting. And here's the thing, is I stood up for the people and their right to choose their own healthcare, just like we have the right to choose our own health pathways. And your system, government, not you, system of healthcare, has done nothing but continue to oppress and prejudice our people in it. We were healthier than the average settler who came here. We were compared to the healthiest royals in the whole of Europe, the physicality of the Māori. Now, that we go from that to being at the bottom of every health statistic in this country is an absolute fallacy, is an absolute, I don't know, watershed moment, if you look at it, to open your eyes to where the real privilege and the real prejudice is, continues to be, because we don't. We think we're all being, we all play nice together. I understand what David means. I grew up in Christchurch. I grew up in the heart of white privilege. I didn't realise till I was well old into my 40s that the way I demand to be treated when I go into a store and they're obviously prejudicing me, I say, excuse me, I'm next in the line. I got that from my white privilege upbringing with my friends. I walked into a store in Masterton where our whānau were from after growing up in Christchurch. And if I didn't get treated well, if I was pushed around by the police, if they didn't serve me, they literally would call to someone behind me in my 20s, behind me to come forward, mock me if I asked after expensive piece of jewellery, openly mock to my face.
No, I can understand. Yeah.
My point is, white privilege is what stood me out different to every one of my cousins when I stood up and said, excuse me, I expect to be served. I'm next in line. My cousin go, oh, don't talk like that. When I proposed a policy in our whānau hui or something to do with health or so on, people go, oh, we'll just check that with the doctor. And I said, why would you check with the system that oppresses you to see if this is all right with them? Why? It makes no sense. David wants us all to be one as long as one looks like him. Because I want us all to be one. Can you come and be one that looks like me? Because we live beautiful, happy lives together. We really do. But we're judged by the 1% of idiots who've been captured in intergenerational trauma, who are, yes, the highest rates of prison per capita, child abuse per capita, but that's still less than 1% of us. Why is that the only thing that is glorified on the news every night to make Māori look like the savages in this country that continue to terrify everybody and no one else gets seen?
Well, it's wrong. I don't see it because I don't watch that news anymore.
Yeah, I don't watch it either. I don't see it either. But it happens. It happens.
No, I know it does. Coming up against time, I think what I picked up there, tell me if I'm wrong, is basically the mana has been sucked out of the room over time, right? It's gone.
Well, not by us.
No, I'm not saying that you sucked
our
it.
Our mana stays. Our mana has resolved.
Yeah, but it's an offence against it, right?
Yes, it is. And it has never stopped. And so we will never stop.
How does that go back together? Well, I'm still alive.
Stop trying to pull the treaty apart and prove that it is a weapon against Pākehā. It has never been anything but an invitation to come and coexist in this country. We're the ones who haven't been allowed the opportunity to coexist. We have to come and be like you to exist. It was called the assimilation practice, literally done on purpose.
Well, it was a technique, wasn't it? A colonial technique to...
They believed it true of the time. But they had to prove, in order to do it, they had to prove that the native was a savage who needed our help.
So then we don't have to feel so bad about it.
That's right. And that's the rhetoric that continues today from the stuck in the last century Hobson's pledge-loving racist who still says, oh, but for us, you'd be running around in skirts and living in grass huts. No. We owned the economy in this country and we traded. We were used to trading. We had the first market gardens. Those things, those powers of economy were stripped from us and we were impoverished to be the new slave or serfdom of the new landed gentry leadership who came here to find some land because there was none left in England to share.
Wow. Great conversation. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
All sides of the story is what we say, all sides of the story.
Well, absolutely. I know that I'm never going to read all the comments that probably come on this after I've spoken, and I can imagine what they look like. They're not worth my time.
Well, there'll be a mix, to be fair, because I've seen this before. But, yeah, some of them will be like you're thinking. Yep.
Oh, yes, I know. Don't you worry. When I was in Parliament, I had death threats.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So.
Well, this is nothing then.
No. And this is the thing is like, when you're a forthright, opinionated, well-educated Māori woman and you stand up for things, you're a stroppy, angry black woman. Don't listen to her. They'll do anything to diminish your voice in this country to prove that it's not worth listening to. You're welcome, New Zealand.
Thank you for coming on RCR, Manama Fox.
Kia ora. Thank you, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.